Today's podcast is brought to you by Health IQ and another sponsor. But right now we're going to get to Health IQ because they're back for another round after the first couple months. We touched base and I said, hey, Health IQ, how'd it go? They said, great. There are actually 16 trainiacs that have signed up and every single one of them has saved money on their life insurance.
16. That's amazing, actually.
It's a good round number. That's more life insurance than I sold ever as a life insurance advisor.
Does that say something about how good you were at that job?
Fantastic. Health IQ, very good company. We're big fans of it. Unfortunately, we can't use it because they're a US-based life insurance agency and we're up in Canada. But what they've done is they've set up life insurance specifically designed for swimmers, cyclists, runners, vegans, people who take care of themselves. And those people, like us, trainiacs, can save as much as 25% on their life insurance as opposed to paying the same as the unhealthy burger and fries sitting on the couch people.
Well, that's an amazing thing.
Great deal. Great deal. Go check out healthiq.com/triathlon Taryn or use the coupon code triathlon Taryn if you just call in and let them know that you came from us. Next sponsor, NTK, take it away.
Four Sigmatics back.
They're back with their mushroom coffee. I've been singing their praises.
You love this stuff.
Love it. I probably have it up to four times a day, and I'm going to give you guys a recipe idea that I've talked about a lot that has probably been a huge hit, one of the biggest recipe hits that we've had as Gracie scratches her collar. The bulletproof, air quotes, bulletproof coffee that's taken the world by storm. I've veganized it, and instead of just straight up coffee, I've Four Sigmaticized it, because using that Four Sigmatic cordyceps or mushroom coffee, you get antioxidants, you get adaptogens, boost your immune system, lower caffeine, less gut rot, all good things. Very tasty.
So are you drinking less actual coffee these days? I don't know this because I don't see you in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Instead of four cups, I would say it's two cups of coffee tops and then probably two or three cups of Four Sigmatic.
Well, thanks Four Sigmatic for making Taryn healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel tippy top of the heap of fitness right now. Go to foursigmatic.com/triathlon Taryn to save 15%. Just straight up, or if you use the coupon code Triathlon Taryn, 15% off of any Four Sigmatic product. Today's guest is John Mix, who is the founder and CEO of Finis. Now, you probably know Finis for their snorkels, for their ankle straps, for their fins, for basically all gadgetry that is meant to help swimmers get more comfortable in the water. And we chatted with John when I was down in San Francisco. Unfortunately, NTK was not with me then, so this was a solo mission that I went on and spent a day at Finis, and both John and Jill and everyone at the Finis family was very, very welcoming. You'll pick up on that in the interview. John is super outgoing, and we didn't really talk about it a lot, but he really instills that feeling of like just sort of being friendly and family sort of feeling with Finis. If you're to go there, you can actually drop in on Finis, not out of the blue, but you can contact them and go and swim in their endless pool. And they open that up to the public because they are that welcoming. In this interview with John, we talk about how he went off to Austria and found this weird monofin thing, this giant fin that swimmers were using there. And he took that, brought it back to North America and built that into Finis, the company that today sells upwards of 10 to 15,000 snorkels a month, apparently. Speaking of that snorkel, we also talk about how he built his first set of snorkels using sprinkler hoses, literally sprinkler hoses. And that sprinkler hose business is what has grown into Finis. Very interesting stuff. As a business guy myself, and I love hearing about the story of like really scrappy businesses like this coming around and growing into a very well-known brand in any sort of space. So that was very interesting. And then we got into a little bit of specifically how John recommends new triathletes and swimmers get into the sport, because that's entirely what his company is based around. It's about what are the challenges that are going to prevent people from becoming triathletes or swimmers and enjoying their time, and how can he develop products to make that more enjoyable? And then specifically, you know, one of the things very interestingly that I got to experience that day that I think he talks about a little bit in the interview is the coach's communicator. While I was in the endless pool, John came by and he strapped this device to my head that strapped into my cap, and it had bone conducting headphones on my temples. And John sat off to the side of the pool talking into his iPhone, and it was getting picked up by these bone conducting headphones that I was wearing. So John has been around swimming so long that he could just stand off to the side, and he was like, well, you need to bring your hips up. And I could hear it perfectly in this endless pool. And he said, well, you know, we're not getting you to bring your hips up. Wait a minute. Tuck your chin down as if you are holding an orange in between your chin and your neck. And boom, the combination of the endless pool with the mirrors on the bottom and this coach's communicator and John helping me out, instantly my hips came up to the surface. So really helpful guy as far as swimming tips go. And I was really thankful that he spent some time with me. Like, we spent 4 hours together that day, and it went by a grand total of, felt like, hour and a half. This interview, much shorter. So here is John Mix, the CEO and founder of Finice. Enjoy, everyone. Here with John Mix, the founder, CEO of Finice. We have to start this off, I think, the entire rest of the podcast hinges on you getting this right. Are you a Speedo or a Jammers kind of guy?
I wear a brief.
Okay, we can continue on then. All right, if you had brief, said Jammers,
yeah,
I don't know if we could have been friends anymore.
Okay, yeah, I'm a brief guy, and it's funny that to wear a brief is associated with a name that's also a brand name.
Yeah.
And then, like,
banana hammock. Let's call it that. So let's kind of talk about how Finice started. Been around, I guess, in one way, shape, or form since 1988. You were in Austria playing water polo and brought back, or at least brought back, the idea to the United States of the monofin. Is that all? That's all right?
That is accurate. Yep.
Okay.
87, 88. I was in Europe. Yeah.
Okay. But it didn't really start up until, what, 4 years later, 5 years later? Like, what was going on that held it up from actually becoming a business?
The gap. I was exposed to the monofin on pool decks in Europe. And what were they doing there? Why was there a monofin in Austria or Italy or Hungary or Germany?
Like, why are people strapping both feet into one fin?
Yeah, what
are for
they,
general swimming?
What are they doing? So it originated probably around the original free divers. So the free divers, the Jacques Mayals of the world, were putting these monofins on and swimming at great depths. And then it made its way to the pool. And there's a very obscure sport that exists everywhere called fin swimming. So at these pools, there's somebody at the pool that's participating in this fin swimming where you put a big monofin on and you race. And it's really phenomenal. You go really fast.
Doing a dolphin kick?
You're doing a dolphin kick. There are apnea races where it's completely underwater, and there's races on the surface. And my first time I tried it, I went 50 meters underwater. And when I got to the wall, I thought, oh my gosh, I still have capacity. And I turned around, I swam about halfway back, and I came to the surface and said, man, this is awesome. And so the early development of the company was, I came back and I thought, I think this would be a great thing for people to enjoy out in the ocean, out in the lake. I mean, this is really fun. People would want to use it. But the truth is, that really wasn't it. So while I had this idea and I studied patents, it wasn't going to be something that people just used and enjoyed. So I put it on the back burner.
Like the idea wasn't quite fleshed out.
Yeah,
enough?
Exactly.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I was hopeful, wishing that I could have that next California great idea that said, hey, look at me, I'm using it out at the beach. But the whole idea of strapping 2 feet in there, maybe that made people nervous. You know, you could catch a wave out on a swell, but, you know, like, you're competing against people that just want to boogie board, bodyboard, surf. So it just wasn't right, you know. my father's advice was, you have a good idea here. Keep working on all the other things you're doing. You'll know when the time's right. You'll just know. What did that really mean? I didn't know until in 92 when Pablo Morales is the co-founder of the company. And he came back. He went to Barcelona, came back with a couple more gold medals, 100 butterfly, you know, medley relay. And I said, hey, Pablo, you know, let's get together and chat about the Olympics and, you know, congratulations. And I want to show you something. So we met at the pool and he tried the monofin and it was quite simple. He said, God, it's really fun. Okay. I thought of that. He said, you go really fast. I knew that. And I said, would it be a benefit for swimmers? He says, yeah, for sure. That was it. At that moment, I said, let's make this thing happen. Let's do something for swimmers.
So it became the product itself, the monofin, it like didn't change. It was more, where do you fit it into the world?
Yeah.
That's what changed. So yeah. It became more of a swim training tool as opposed to a go out to the beach and catch some waves and mess
yes.
around.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we, Pablo even got a little bit sideways on the whole sport too, because he said, wow, they compete like this in, you know, all over the world. People are racing with these things. Maybe it would be fun to build race cars. Right? Meaning build these big, giant racing monofins. And that's our first efforts were building the big, giant ones. And we went to international competitions in Bogota, Colombia. We went to China. We went to Hungary. And we met great people in the sport. But we realized if you were going to build such a great race car, but yet in the U.S. market, we didn't even have people that even knew how to ride a tricycle yet, right? So maybe there's an easing in period. Maybe we should build it more for that bigger market where it provides a benefit for swimmers. And if we should ever emerge into the sport, that's fine. But there's a bigger benefit behind the race car. So the desire to go fast existed, but the more we went fast, the more we were able to truly see the benefits for swimming.
So it became, yeah, more of a swim aid. And then that has led to, I guess, the entire philosophy of the company since that time, that let's say you were a water polo player, and water polo players in our lane are known for being the guys that are really, let's call it, rubby in the lane. They're comfortable getting on top of people, drafting, moving around the lane,
cheating,
whatever it is, pushing your shoulder down, unzipping your wetsuit if we're doing open water swims, because they're just comfortable in the lane. But the average swimmer, the average triathlete is not.
Right.
And we were just talking earlier, you were saying that, like, that's your why now, that it's Finis is all about helping swimmers become more comfortable and enjoy the water. So did you know right at that time that that was going to be the direction that the company was going to follow for product development, for marketing, for everything? Or was it still just at the point that, you know, you found an in, a start?
Yeah. So Pablo and I, we called the company a hobby for the first 4 years. We were a company, but it was a hobby. Pablo and I did it. You know, fake it till you make it. We had day jobs and we employed some other people to help us carry through what we wanted to do. But what the monofin, what here was the clear thing that the monofin did, and the other products build along similar philosophy. So the monofin teaches you a technique of undulation, call it the sine curve, is a really smooth transitional motion.
That's that smooth kick that starts from an elite swimmer's chest, essentially.
That's right. Yeah. And so many people, they got it wrong. So Pablo was a swimmer who, when Pablo rolled to his side and kicked this sinusoidal motion on his side, you could see that Pablo created power in both directions of the kick. And so many people, when they kick, they think that the power is happening on the downward thrust of one foot.
Just that snap.
Right.
Yeah.
But what's actually happening in that downward thrust of that one foot, your foot is shaped with a curve on the top, and there's actually not a lot of water that's captured on the top of your foot. And so what's really happening is as the foot reaches beyond a straight across point, it actually would be in a negative, it's actually a resistance on. So, but what happens is when one foot pushes down, the other foot is coming up and it's capturing a lot of water on the bottom of your foot. And that's actually propulsive force moving you forward. So, you know, we think it's a downward push of the kick. Well, when that foot kicks down, the other foot's pushing up, and pushing up is actually moving you forward. And Pablo, he knew that was happening for him in his dolphin kick. But so many other people, they hadn't quite captured that yet. And when you put a monofin on, it accentuated it. It said, wow, I can have power in both directions. So like what you thought you were building and what you ultimately realized you built only came to you because your customers started to tell you that said, hey, we thought we were just going fast. We've actually learned something here. And other products have evolved because of that.
Yeah. What was the second one? Second one was the snorkel?
The swimmer snorkel.
So can you tell me, I've heard through the grapevine that the start of the swimmer snorkel involved garden hoses and a giant trash can in your front lawn.
Yeah, pretty close to that, right? So sprinkler pipes. So we knew that if we could eliminate the need to turn the head, a person could get really comfortable in the water. And when you would watch elite level swimmers, they could swim very, very slowly with good body balance and, you know, correctly. And most people, if you said, you know, I'm a novice swimmer, and yet to do something perfectly, I should practice it really slowly to make sure I do the technique properly. But to swim slowly, you run out of air. So, okay, let's put a snorkel on so that we don't have to worry about turning the head or worry about even getting air at all. And therefore, we can swim really slowly and we can think about, what's truly happening with my body mechanics when I swim? So conceptually, we knew what we wanted to do. In this sport called fin swimming, they did wear a snorkel that went over the top of your head. And we said, but how do you make it? So we used sprinkler pipe. And we took sprinkler pipe. And how do you bend?
Like hard metal?
Hard metal
sprinkler pipe?
Plastic, hard plastic.
Hard, okay.
Yeah, tubing. How do you bend it? We heated hot Teflon rods in an oven, got the hot Teflon rods up to a certain temperature, shoved it down the mouth of the sprinkler tubing, bent it around because then it would hold its shape, and then cut it on a jig. And we sold a couple thousand bent sprinkler tubings. With a mouthpiece attached, and people were saying they loved it. We're thinking, this is a piece of bent plastic pipe I'm selling for $30. You know, do I feel guilty? Part of it I did, but there was a, like, learning the technique to actually make this happen was ingenious. It came to us from one of my engineer friends and said, hey, I think we could do it like this.
Where does the trash can come into it?
Oh boy, the trash can. I don't recall.
So
I think that was kind of an evolution,
a giant trash can, like a BFI bin, basically, on your front lawn. That your wife came home to and had to call you and say, there is a trash can taking up our front lawn.
Yeah, here we go. So after we bent enough sprinkler pipes and made this, it was evident, like, the market wanted us to develop the front snorkel. So then I'd say to my engineer friends, I said, okay, guys, now design one that actually looks really cool and functions better than just a piece of plastic pipe. So they designed our first swimmer snorkel. And when we first got in, like, that very first purchase was, okay, we're going to buy like 8,000 of these things. This is a lot. I mean, like, we're going all in. Here we go. Let's make it. So we made the mold, we made it over in Asia, and it came as a, so at this point, the business is still in my home. In the garage, we are making monofins, and in the two spare bedrooms, I've got a couple of women helping us out answering the phone. And when it was someone calling for John or Pablo, they'd say, they're not in at the moment, but can I get them a message?
Because you were working, still working your day job.
We had our day job going on. So they didn't say where we were at. Oh, they're at their day job. They just
they're
said,
in a meeting right now. Yeah,
they're not available at the moment, but can I have them call you back? That was it, right? And that was the truth. So that first, what it was a 20-foot shipping container came in from Asia. And a 20-foot shipping container looks a whole lot like a garbage dumpster. So in our home at the time, it was a nice waterfront community where we have water ski boats and sailboats and water polo cages in our backyard on the river. So people really care about what their houses look like and what the neighborhood looks like. And a big, ugly 20-foot shipping container got dumped on our driveway. And that was our first delivery of snorkels.
Of 8,000 snorkels on your front lawn.
Yeah. And my wife called and says, I think someone just delivered like a garbage dumpster to us. And I thought, oh, yay, it's the snorkels.
Oh, you're jacked up about it and excited.
It filled the garage. It filled the spare bedroom. And it filled one of the gangways leading out towards water. And my wife said, I think it's time to move out of the house. So that was like the wake-up call. Like, yeah, it doesn't work here anymore. You know, I got a young guy coming in and, you know, building parts in the garage. We have a newborn son. You know, God, it was chaos and totally fun. Yeah, it was really fun.
So let's put some timelines on this. 92, 93 was when you start launching with the monofin. The trash can gets delivered. 96, 97. You're still working at that point. And it was 97 that you decided it was going to be a little bit more than a hobby?
Yeah.
Or did you still consider it a hobby, but it was going to be a full-time hobby?
It was going to be more than a hobby. We had 4 or 5 employees. And I thought, you know, every day that I would come home from the day job, which was really good to me, I was so excited about working on Finis stuff. I mean, the most exciting part of my day wasn't, you know, it was electrical engineering, sales, right? Lighting controls and power controls. But when I would get to go visit Richard Quick at Stanford and talk to him and watch what he was talking to his swimmers about, that was the highlight of my day. Going over and seeing Nord at Cal was the highlight of my day. You know, receiving a call from the other coaches and stepping out to talk to someone about swimming, that was the fun stuff. So I would come home in the evening after a day's work, and I'd look at what has taken place in the day. We were still getting orders by fax coming in from Europe.
The fax? I've seen fax machines in history books. Yeah.
So that was the fun part, is I would work in the evenings and on the weekends and in the mornings on Finis-related stuff. And I finally said, this is more fun. I'm going to have a go at it. You know, it's now or never.
Let's get into how you started picking what those first products were going to be. You mentioned that you started looking at basically what were the areas that triathletes, swimmers, like new swimmers have that hold them back from enjoying swimming. Even today, swimming is swimming. It hasn't really changed. Your face is still in the water, you know, 2,000 years later, since the first swimming hole was around, I suppose. Somebody getting into the sport now, what are they going to encounter? And what were the first few products that you started looking at designing to fix those issues?
I'll give a lot of credit to my co-founder, Pablo Morales. So Pablo, I think still today, is the winningest swimmer ever in collegiate history. He swam at Stanford. He won every NCAA race he ever swam at Stanford. Like, it's seldom done. Right. So Pablo had this amazing career at Stanford and an amazing Olympic career, an amazing story. And Pablo, you know, as a water polo guy, Pablo gave me the credibility to talk to swim coaches at all sorts of levels. And what seemed to be so top of mind for Pablo, when he shared that with me, I would ask Pablo, but why? And Pablo would explain to me the why. And my next thought was, does everybody know that? Because I swim. I played water polo at a high level. So you're telling me as though it should be first of thought, very common knowledge. And yet, I don't know that this is really being communicated, Pablo. So, you know, after the evolution of the snorkel, conversations come up with Pablo, but with coaches and other swimmers that Pablo has given me that introduction to, that through observation, when you watch a swimmer swim, the best swimmers in the world, they don't swim flat like a barge.
Yeah, right? Tugboat.
Yeah, that's right. So what does happen is the body rotates, and it rotates such that the head stays still, but the body will roll in the water. And if you think about the way a sailboat slices through the water, when it rolls at the right time, then when you put pressure at the top of your stroke, you're actually pulling your body past your hand. You're not grabbing the water and pulling the water. You're actually anchoring the hand and pulling the body past the hand. So there's a timing of the rotation. And I think, you know, Terry Laughlin taught it so eloquently. It was
from total immersion.
Like that ability to feel yourself slide through the water with some ease. And that's, you know, as we think about the why does a person stop swimming or why does a person not enjoy swimming? So philosophy of the company, like chances are that one of these fundamentals, they're not quite doing it right. And if we could teach people the fundamentals such that they have proper technique, then they will get better. And improvement is like rewarding. And even today, I'm not getting better. I'm actually getting slower. Okay. The older I get, the slower I get. But I swim properly. My hips are on the surface. I have some body rotation. So when I go for a swim, I get out of my swim and I say, oh God, that felt great. I think it's euphoric, like the person who enjoys a good Bikram yoga session. They get out and they think, oh, so great. I stretched so wonderfully.
Yeah, you don't get out feeling beat up like going on a long run.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's if you enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you learn the basics and you can, I think my first 3-4 years, I struggled in the water immensely. I was fighting it constantly. And then I wanted to join a master swim program. And before I did that, I said, I got to start from square one, because if I'm going to enjoy this and have people around looking at me, I got to get a lot better at just my swim technique. And I went through the basics of total immersion and all of a sudden it became enjoyable. And it was the easiest part of triathlon. Like you said, like put me out in open water with a wetsuit on. Like I've literally gone for a 37K swim. We did that last year and it was not fighting.
Yeah.
Like you're moving with the water. You're enjoying it. I didn't enjoy the last couple hours of that 37K swim, but being in the water was, it's like you said, like it's rejuvenating.
I think it's important in anybody's swim. They talk about, well, am I getting in and what's the warm-up all about? So if you go to the pool with the mindset that says, I like to swim 2,500 yards 3 days a week, that's fine. But take the moment to do a warm-up. The warm-up is about just getting your mental frame of mind that says, there's the motion I'm going to do. Does it feel right? You know, how does my technique feel? How do I feel? Am I ready for this? Go through a little warm up and then look at what it is that you want to set out and go do. And then you go do it.
Mm.
I just think so. Back to how the product development cycle worked, it really does all fall back to even whether we're working with the most elite athletes or the beginning athlete. If you can break down the swim and simplify it. There's little, I think that what we build are tools, much like if you had an ailment and you knew that if you have a headache, you might take an aspirin. If something else is hurting, you're going to do something different. The tools that we build are intended just to enhance a greater understanding of what it is we're out there trying to achieve.
So let's talk about the agility paddle. as an example of developing that. That's what I've been using as my bread and butter paddle mm-hmm. lately. Looking at it from the outside as a consumer, you'd be like, this is a silly paddle. It looks weird. It's scooped. You only put your thumb in it. How does it actually stay on your hand? I put it on and it's my favorite paddle. Feels right. It puts that hand in a nice cup position, but not stiff. So you've got tension on the hand, but it still can be relaxed and somehow it stays on throughout the entire stroke. While at the same time you get to the wall, you can let it dangle, adjust your goggles, grab onto the wall. Let's say, talk about your product development cycle in general with that as a backdrop. How did that come about?
I think to the bigger, broader market of people who swim for fitness and wellness, they often look at the physique of a swimmer and they think, boy, look at that nice physique. I think I want to buy some big giant paddles and
work my
upper body because I want to look like that person. Well, that person actually looks like that, not because of the paddles. They look like that because of the amount of time they spend swimming. If you spend enough time swimming, that's the way your body changes a little bit and you'll have a bigger upper body. It's not about the size of the paddle. So it's so much thought in people using this bigger paddle and then what is that paddle doing for me? So certainly there's some strength training. And even though the agility is not a whole lot bigger than your hand, it captures the water better than a naked hand. So you are going to get some strength training. Mm-hmm. But what's really important is we always want to encourage good swimming technique. So if you want to strap a paddle to your hands, you could technically swim incorrectly and still swim with those paddles.
Oh, yeah.
But what's the purpose of swimming incorrectly? It's not like you want to keep, you know, improving that technique a little bit at a time such that you can, you know, without the paddles, your technique is really good. So by only putting, I mean, to think of when the hand goes into it, we think of it like a painter's palette. So the original painter's palette would be
put your thumb in it and just hold it upside down.
Yeah. So we've got enough going on here. So similar concept. Now when that paddle first goes into at the top of your stroke, you create a little glide. And again, it's about getting a good anchor. You set an anchor at the top of your stroke. They call it early vertical forearm.
Yeah.
But you set the anchor. And then it's to pull it's at that moment, you rotate the body and you pull the body past the hand. So if you stay with a good positive anchor, the paddle will in fact stay on. And to the benefit of early vertical forearm, if you anchor, you're now going to capture water surface on your forearm. And if you let this thing, people say, oh, you're dropping your elbow. Dropping the elbow means that you're not engaging the forearm. If you drop the forearm, then in fact, the paddle falls off. And you say,
right, it slips off past the thumb. Yeah,
the paddle fell off. How do I keep them on? Well, as long as you swim properly, the paddle will stay on. So it's encouraging proper technique. And once the technique is done, and here's my favorite way I like using the agility paddles. I will come up with my hypothetical set. I do swim by myself, but let's just say that I say I'm going to do 8 100s on the 130 and I'm going to hold 115s. I will alternate such that the first one I do with the paddles feel like I'm capturing a little bit more water and I'm going to be cognitive to my stroke count because I am. So I'm going to say, well, with the paddles, I was able to go 11 and 12 as my stroke count. And now it's the next 100. And I go and I say, I should still be able to swim 11 and 12 as my stroke count, even though I don't have the paddle. And I come in. My time's not quite as fast because the paddles help me go a little bit faster. But it's not too far off. And what I really try to grasp by alternating, because simple thumb hold, right? So I did a 100 with them on, set them on the deck, 100 with them off, 100 with them on, 100 with them off. And it really, to me, it's about that stroke count. Like I want to go just as far without the paddle as I did with them. Mm. And I knew what it felt like with the paddle. How do I find that same feeling without the paddle? And it's a very intuitive thing. The more in tune with like feeling of just your body actually slipping, sliding and moving through the water, it makes it enjoyable. So it's a thinking
activity. In a perfect world, you're not working that hard.
Right.
Yeah. But it's strange to think that way, that like we're programmed as athletes that the harder you work on the bike, the harder you work on the run, the faster you're going to go. In the swim, however, exactly the opposite happens for beginner swimmers. You work harder and you probably get slower. And then you get onto the bike and you're gassed.
Yeah. Efficiency. Yeah. I mean, swimming can be, you know, to the triathlete who might mentally get psyched out because they're thinking about that swim, I'd like to figure out a way that says, let's not expend that energy thinking that I don't like the swim. Let's teach you to enjoy the swim more with a greater level of simplicity. And that way you're not using unnecessary energy before the bike or run. So teach you to swim efficiently. And once you're swimming with good technique, then you can work harder and become better and faster. But if your technique isn't right, it doesn't matter how hard you work. You're working too hard because you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So
how did the product ideas come around?
The ideas, there's a lot of osmosis from within the building. There's a lot of people in this building that participate in swimming, and they run and they bike and triathlon and swimming. So there's a constant infusion within the office, but quite often it comes from your listening audience. It's a coach, it's a swimmer, it's somebody who presents a solution to a problem that is something bigger than their own. They have noticed that we have a new product called a Swim Coach Communicator. And it's quite simply that people have said, you know, when a person's running or riding a bike or playing other sports, we have the ability to speak to them at the moment that they do something that they'd like to offer correction. Okay, we finally built a device that says, well, now a coach could take their smartphone and watch somebody swimming. And at the moment that the swimmer drops their elbow.
Get that elbow up.
Yeah, or, you know, or sinks their hips, whatever. Then the coach can actually speak to them and says, hey, you know, like you're swimming really flat right now. Remember about your rotation. So, you know, that idea was a combination of hundreds of people telling me time and time again, wouldn't it be nice if we could talk to a swimmer when they're swimming? And it was always, yeah, yeah, yeah. Until all of a sudden one day you realize how you could do it.
Mm.
So that's the aha moment, right? When, you know, all these ideas sit out in our big peripheral vision and you just wonder, you know, maybe until all of a sudden you get that aha moment. You're like, oh my gosh.
We can do this.
Yeah. And I think this, I've heard it enough times that, and then you move into quick experimentation. Let's figure out if we can even do it. Fail fast. But if you don't fail and if it looks like, tastes like, feels like, you know, kind of works like, then you say, then how would we do it? Now that we know we can do it, how should we do it? Or should we do it?
Do you have a flop of a product that comes to mind?
We have a product right now called the Isolation Paddle. And it's the concept of the ISO paddle started 4 years ago.
This is the brand new one, right?
Yeah.
That I've tried, that you isolate either your lats or your biceps, depending on what you're...
Yeah, you wear it one way or you flip it over and you wear it the other way.
Yeah.
Now, I will tell you about a flop product in a few moments, but that product originated with the concept of, everyone understands this, if you were to imagine squeezing a ping pong ball between your pointer finger and your thumb, it engages all your inner muscles. And if you were to swim like that, you'd have all these inner muscles engaged. Now, if you rotated that and you said, now we're going to swim with the ping pong ball in between our pinky finger and our thumbs.
It's your lats.
Wow, you engage something else. Okay, but you don't swim with your hand in this weird position. But being aware of when you're engaging your muscles in your swim means that you're going to swim more balanced and you're going to engage the muscles to swim. So not a failure, but it took 4 years to figure out that product because we tried so many versions of so many things to say, how do you do it?
Oh, the geometry on it is wild.
Yeah.
You look at it and I still have to think about how I'm putting my hand in it to get the lats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a failed product. We built a product a number of years ago that you would pick up your heart rate from a sensor worn on attached to your ear, and it would audibly communicate to you.
Really?
Yep.
Through bone conduction?
Through bone conduction.
Okay.
And that product was highly accurate, and people said, it's really nice to hear your heart rate when you're out there swimming, but it's kind of hard to hear. Can't always hear it.
Mm.
And it'd be better if you put memory in it, so when we're done, we can kind of look at our heart rate over the course of our workout, and we would have that information. So we said, you're right, we should build a better product. And we thought we figured out exactly how to do it. We built it. We had the right sensors, and we were picking up the heart rate on the forearm. But the problem was that we were inaccurate 10% of the time. And it's easy to explain to some people that were, if you could say, hey, filter out the false highs and the false lows, because at the end, if you could see that like 90% of the data is pretty accurate, yeah, you would understand what training zones you're actually training in, and to understand your heart rate when you're training is important.
Yeah, map it against rate of perceived exertion and thing, and your speed. Put all that together, you can find your ideal stroke rate, your speed, your cadence, your, all that.
And we ultimately decided not to bring the product to market. We did all the engineering, we did the molds, we built the app. And the reason why is some people are unforgiving. And if you bring out a product that is 10% of the time inaccurate, the public's going to punish you for that. They are going to say, hey, I got a false high reading and I went to the doctors to check my heart rate. Can you pay the bill?
Be all over slow twitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I got my heart rate was incredibly low. So I think to understand your heart rate in training is a wonderful thing. I don't think we're at the accuracy level in swimming to really utilize the information to its full capacity. There will come a time. So I'm a fan of heart rate. Yeah. It's a failed product. I mean, there are several products that we tried, but in the end, if it's not right, then don't bring it to market.
That's interesting, because with, say, HRV right now, there's all these HRV apps and algorithms that you can download to this, that, or the other device, and people have it on all the time, and like specifically here in San Francisco, you hear about the biohackers just living, eating, and breathing HRV, heart rate variability. But apparently, a lot of these heart rate variability apps are off by as much as 20% when stress tested against a polar. But it doesn't stop these companies from starting up and releasing it to the market for one reason or another. Anyway.
Just if you understand who your customer is, I think that some people can live with a greater tolerance. If I was thinking just general health and wellness, you know, within these parameters, this is the accuracy of the information. But in the world of swimming and triathlon, where we are in pursuit of being better,
yeah,
then we're heavily relying on the information. And if it isn't accurate, then we can't do it. It's a tough one.
Yeah. Let's start wrapping up here because you have to get to a meeting. I have to get into the endless pool here and give that a try. I started off with these ideas being rapid fire questions, but I understand that they are now more medium fire questions.
Okay.
So it doesn't have to be one word answer, but I think we've got four of them here.
Okay.
It's about your product. What are your go-to paddles?
I use the agility paddle. The freestyle paddle is a nice paddle because it really teaches you that there's a shortcoming in one of the mistakes people make in swimming is they claw at the water. The hand goes in, they grab at the water, and they start trying to think, it's time to go, time to go. And we need to linger longer a little bit out front. It's, you need to get that hand in. You need to let it slide. That extension at the top of your stroke, it initiates the rotation in your body. It sets up proper technique. The nice thing about the agility paddle is it also kind of gives you that front end glide before you start grabbing the water. So it's the agility paddle. But think about making sure you maximize your extension. It initiates the rotation.
Okay, your go-to goggles.
I'm a fan of the circuit goggle right now. So the circuit goggles, it's extremely comfortable.
Simple as that. You came up with the underwater MP3 player. Were you the first for that?
Yes.
Yeah? So when you are bored swimming and you use it, what do you listen to now? Audiobooks, music?
I am always listening to music. I like to swim to something that's a little bit more soulful. So I have tried to swim with the Red Hot Chili Peppers on. You know, I just can't swim at that rate, right?
So, oh, you'd be pumped up all the time.
Yeah, you're just like, I mean, like you just can't keep up with it. But if you can get some like Ray LaMontagne going on, something that like feels soulful and heartful, you can really cruise to it. I mean, good country music out with your, you know, it's funny enough, but you want something that has rhythm and pace and cadence.
Yeah.
And then I never swim without my, currently it's the Duo.
Yeah.
We're working on something new.
Mm.
But I never swim without music because it allows me to escape. And, you know, I might even keep it as simple as says, I'm going to go out and swim for about 10 or 12 songs.
Just songs. I'm going to go do songs.
Yeah.
How long did you swim? Don't know. 12 songs.
Yeah. And then I know, but, you know, I'll look up at that clock and I know that if 45 or 50 minutes has passed, I know about how far I've swum.
Yeah.
I don't need to count my laps. I knew. And it literally, it sometimes keeps you in the pool longer because, you know, you say, hey, I'm just going to alternate by song. And all of a sudden you get to another good song and you say, I'm sticking with it, man. I'm going one more round. This is good.
That's fun fact. With my 37K marathon swim last summer, I had the Duo on and I was like, you know what? I need something that's going to get me through hours and hours. And I ended up downloading a podcast series called Wrath of the Cons. Have you heard about that?
I have not.
I think it's 5 podcasts. Each one is about 2 to 3 hours. And it's the entire story of Genghis Khan and his lineage and the Mongol Empire. And you'd think like Terrans in the water doing this marathon swim. And I'm listening to history about Genghis Khan. And yeah, I was in the water for hours and hours and hours. And I took it out early because I got to a point of suffering that just sound started irritating me. But open water swimming, listening to the Mongol Empire. Final one. If this doesn't work out for you with Finis, what's your fallback career?
I have a 18-year-old and a 21-year-old and a wonderful wife. And I think my fallback career would say, all right, boys, what do you want to go do? And my wife and I would dive in with them and help them try and achieve their dreams.
That's a good one. That actually answers what I was going to ask you about next. So that was kind of a joke, obviously, because you probably sold enough pole boys to even just to triathletes alone. Our pole boys are surgically inserted to our crotch area.
Hopefully it's the access buoy now because you learn a lot. You learn so much by
shifting. Is that the ankle lock?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean, at that
point. I'm going to go try that right now.
Yeah. In your swim, right? So people stop swimming because they swim uphill. Okay. Put a pole buoy on. And it gets your back end up to the surface of the water. And now I'm swimming on a level surface, maybe even swimming a little bit downhill. Think about it.
Ankles dragging, yeah.
Yeah. And when you shift it to your ankles, it completely changes your aquatic signature. Now you really say like, wow, this swimming thing really isn't bad at all. But if we did nothing but walk uphill every day, we'd be like, God, I hate walking uphill. And that's why people quit swimming. So, you know, use the access buoy and watch your aquatic signature change when you wear it between your thighs and when you shift it down to your ankles. You will become so much more aware of what works and what doesn't work in the water. you'll enjoy it more.
I'm going to go try that right now. What's a typical day entail for you? Obviously, it's more than a hobby now. You've got yourself a full-time job, but it's not, you're well past that stage of, is Finice going to be around? And you've got great staff here, good people. I like you guys. Yeah. What do you do day to day now? I'm sure you could retire, but you're still here every day.
I love what I do. I think there's a whole lot more to be done. I have this crazy vision that says swimming could quite possibly be one of the biggest market opportunities in the world, all over the world. It doesn't matter if you're rich or if you're poor. It doesn't matter if you swim in a pool or a pond. Swimming's an activity that if you are fortunate, you will teach your kids how to swim. It's a lifelong skill they can always have, and it keeps them safe. If we can learn it as a child, we may participate in it as a sport in our youth. It's really highly competitive. Competitive swimming is a full-time job. It's not for everybody. But at some point in our lives, we find that thing that, what is it that we enjoy doing? And you can swim from birth until you die. You know, there are people out there swimming that are 100 years old. My mom goes to the pool 3, 4, 5 times a week for 3 hours, right? She's 82. So my mom still loves the water. Is she swimming laps? Kind of. She's going up and down the pool. She's doing water walking. She's doing breaststrokes. She's doing some of this. She just enjoys time in the water. So I think I'm diverting from the question, but like, what does the day look like? I start my morning early almost every morning. And what I do is I check in with my team in Europe and I say, is there anything going on out there that I need to know about that I can help you with? I've got a wonderful team in Europe. So I look at my emails between 5 and 6 in the morning and I correspond with them. Then I get to go have some exercise with my wife, some breakfast with my wife, and I'm in here 8 in the morning or so, like, hey, let's have at it. I got this great staff to work with. And I like to get out of here before the day is done. So, you know, I could check out at 4 o'clock. Again, I'm home doing my thing, you know, but between that 7 and 9 o'clock window, I'm always checking in to say, what's going on with the partners I have in the Asia Pacific region of the world? Because it's the start of their day. And if I can answer a question now, I make them better. They can complete their day. So I really look at this thing globally. You know, during the day, I'm here with this team and it's North America focused.
Because you're trying to get as many people swimming as possible.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be the worst part of triathlon, but it's often looked at that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. I hope it works out.
It's working out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in.
If there was anything on the podcast that you heard and you want to know more about, you can visit our show notes at triathlonterran.com/topics/triathlonterranpodcast. We'll have all of the links listed there. Any other info that you may not have had time to write down or whatever, it's listed there for you in perpetuity.
Something newer, juicier, freer.
We love free.
We love free. We've had resources kind of scattered throughout the website for the past year that we've built up. Well, I have put that all on one single page on the website at triathlonterran.com/free resources. Just by entering your email address, you can get a free swim drill program, a free strength training program, a running drill program. And as we start coming out with things, everything will be there. So you can check it now. You can check it later.
Come early, come often.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be adding stuff all the time, so make sure you check it out frequently. Also, if you've got questions for Taryn, and many of you do, and you leave them in the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, etc., we're trying to aggregate that all into one spot so everybody can see and hear the answer. And that's why we've now launched the Triathlon Trainiask podcast, because it's Trainiacs asking questions. So what we want you to do is head over to triathlonterran.com/trainiask. If you have a question, you'll record it and Taryn may answer it on the podcast. He's recording them every single weekday, and you can find the podcast on every single podcast player out there. And Trainiask is spelled TRAINIASK.
Short nuggets of info. Every right. episode, I guarantee under 10 minutes.
Perfect.
And it's hard to get me to stop talking. So this is a feat. Finally, last thing that you can do is if you like this show or the Trainee Ask show when you check it out, head over to iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, indifferent, hopefully 5 stars because we're pretty awesome.
Reviews just really help us out.
It really helps with the iTunes algorithm. However it happens, it works, it's internet magic and helps other new or aspiring Trainiacs discover us. So that would be much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.